Dan Murphy, you've been reporting on the fallout from what has been called the shot heard round the world in women's college basketball. And in this case, the shot, to be clear, is more metaphorical. So what exactly happened here?
So last year, when we were still in our COVID bubble version of the NCAA tournament, the men showed up in Indianapolis, the women were in San Antonio. And as soon as the women arrived on site, some buzz started picking up about the lackluster facilities and lackluster other amenities for them.
Dan Murphy is a writer for ESPN who covers the business of college sports.
And so Oregon, which was a pretty talented team, and one of their top players, Sedona Prince, show up and get a look at the practice facility. And they see what was being called a weight room, which was in fact maybe a few dumbbells and a half a dozen yoga mats in this huge, cavernous, empty space. If someone had knocked over one of these dumbbells, it would have echoed off the walls for minutes because of how much empty space there was.
So Sedona is taking in this echoing cavern that is pathetic, objectively. And what is her next move from there?
So Sedona Prince isn't just a really good basketball player. She's also a huge social media influencer. She's got something like 3 million followers on TikTok.
So what is a day in the life like for a D1 athlete in the offseason? I'm going to show you guys. First, wake up super
early. She fires up a video showing some of the differences between what's going on in San Antonio and what the men have in Indianapolis.
I got something to show y'all. So for the NCAA March Madness, the biggest tournament in college basketball for women, this is our weight room. Let me show y'all the men's weight room.
Yeah, I'm looking at this now, Dan, and it's like The Rock's basement, what the men have. It's like every single weight machine imaginable, even some seemingly that haven't been like available to the general public yet.
Yeah, it's what you'd imagine that a big-time tournament would look like for a bunch of top-notch athletes.
If you aren't upset about this problem, then you're a part of it.
This video immediately blows up.
Now to college basketball fans and beyond, calling foul after seeing this video. Many were outraged to see the difference in the workout facilities given to the men's and women's teams during March Madness.
Because that's not a weight room. That's just the rack of weights that you buy in the beginning of quarantine and then never use.
The NCAA, to their credit, realized they had messed up. They made an apology. They immediately rectified the weight room situation.
That was by Lynn Holtzman, VP of NCAA Women's Basketball. She since has said they fell short and it will be remedied by tomorrow. And one can only...
The disparities were so clear and so publicly embarrassing for the NCAA that it opened up Pandora's box of all the different things that were different. So people started noticing there were different amounts of food, even different COVID testing. All of these disparities that had sort of flown under the radar that most people knew about for a long time came to light, and the NCAA realized they really had to do something about this. It's now been a year since the NCAA has been looking at this, trying to avoid further embarrassment and fix some of its mistakes. But there are still plenty of questions into how much further they have to go for things to really be equitable.
A year after being publicly shamed on the internet, the NCAA has offered plenty of gestures towards the idea of really investing in women's basketball so that the sport maybe doesn't feel like this barely second-class citizen. And look, no, it's no surprise that the men's tournament is a bigger business with a bigger audience and therefore bigger money. But what you may not realize is that the business of women's college basketball is still limited economically in ways that have nothing to do with the quality of their game itself. So today, with the women's Final Four tipping off tonight, Dan Murphy tells us how far we've come since last year's tournament and what really needs to change. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, April 1st. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Dan, I just want to start here at the top by pointing out that if you missed what happened on Monday night when UConn played NC State, upset NC State, a 2 seed, unseating a 1 seed in double overtime. I mean, you really, I don't think, fully appreciate what madness feels like this March.
Yeah, that was the best game of March so far. Like, if you're not getting excited about Ja'Kia Brown-Turner hitting a corner three with a half a second left in overtime, then you're the one missing out.
Perez floats it, Brown-Turner for the tie!
And like, this has been the case in the women's tournament pretty much all month, right? For people who have been kind of hibernating through that parallel track of college basketball, like, what's been happening?
Well, that's one of the knocks that's always been on women's basketball is it's UConn's world and everybody else, right? But there is a lot more, even at the top, a lot more parity now than there used to be. South Carolina is the one of the best teams in the tournament. Stanford's a defending national championship champion. Arizona's a great team. And there are a lot of upsets, too, happening in the tournament that may not have been happening a decade ago.
And so now, Dan, the question becomes for us, like, how rich this sport is becoming. And I mean that both literally and figuratively, because I think a lot of people out there intuitively are just like, well, look, men's college basketball, that's the real March Madness. That's a tournament we really care about. It's a giant business with a giant audience and a giant brand. And of course, it should have more money to play with than the women's side. But that financial disparity, I mean, you've been reporting deeply into this for a long time now. It seems that the explanation of, well, it's just bigger on that side is kind of insufficient to understand the stark reality of what the women are dealing with.
Right. I'm sure there are already people yelling at their dashboards or cell phones that the men make all the money, so that, of course, they should get more stuff. And I didn't talk to any women's coaches or players who didn't think that these should be separate things and they don't need to be totally equal. But the problem that's come up over and over again as these reports have come out and the NCAA has done a deeper dive is that even when you consider some of those differences, the NCAA has not done enough to maximize the potential of what women's basketball can be and the value of it.
You had mentioned this report that the NCAA commissioned, and I want to get to the fallout from Sedona Prince's video. Like, what actually happened once that thing went viral around the world?
Right. So as soon as her video gets picked up, within a day, a legitimate weight room fell off the back of the truck in San Antonio and showed up at the women's tournament. And then shortly,
funny how that happened so quickly.
Yeah. Snap a finger and it's there.
Guys, we got a weight room. Yeah. We got a ton more dumbbells. Look at that. Look at all these racks for squats and whatever you want to do.
Shortly after the tournament, the NCAA also announced we're going to do much more to try to improve this. They did what most organizations do when facing a PR disaster is they hired a big fancy law firm to put together an in-depth report of how they can do better and what mistakes they've made.
This report on gender equity in college basketball that the NCAA commissioned with this law firm, which was released last August, I mean, this is a level of detail that I did not necessarily expect, Dan. It's kind of unsparing at places. Give us some of the breakdown as to how bad the NCAA acknowledged this disparity really was.
Right. So first off, what this report does is it just puts on paper what those differences look like, starting with the fact that the men's tournament costs about 3 times as much, even in normal years, than the women's tournament, $53 million versus about $18 million that they spend on it. Even when you control for things like the fact that there are more tournament sites in the men's tournament and that they play in bigger venues, it's still a huge discrepancy between the two. whether you're showing up and you're getting half as much value in your gift bag, the swag bag that all the players get, or the player lounges in the men's tournament had cooler stuff than the women's tournament. And all these things are laid out on paper. And the net result is showing that there is some blatant discrepancies. One of the most interesting parts, I spoke to Stanford's head coach, Tara Vanderveer, who is the defending national champion. And she said, look, if you look at both tournaments, it feels like when all this adds up, it feels like we're JV and the men's tournament is varsity. It's hot dogs versus steaks.
So that's sort of like the surface of this, like, okay, that's observable. But what is also fascinating about this report is that they didn't stop there. They went to a second level as to why the structure enables this difference. What did you learn about that?
Right. So I think when we talk about those surface level things, there are probably still some people repeating that refrain of, well, of course, the men make the money, the women don't. And for a long time, the NCAA has argued that the women's basketball tournament is actually loses money on an annual basis. And what this report found was that, one, some of the accounting the NCAA uses to come up with that number is pretty flawed. And two, one of the reasons it loses money is because the NCAA is far from maximizing the value it could be getting out of this if they really invested properly in what this tournament could be.
So explain for us how the NCAA could be investing more and why structurally they're not. Like, how did we get to this sort of an arrangement?
So when it comes down to the money, there are three big buckets that we should probably look at. First is how they measure the money that comes in. Second is how they maximize that money. And third is how they distribute that to try to incentivize further investments. So, Pablo, let's start with how they measure this money. Most of what the NCAA's income comes from their humongous television contract with CBS and Turner Sports. They get about $1 billion a year as a part of this deal. And in exchange, CBS and Turner get both the rights to broadcast all the men's games, but they also have the right to sell corporate sponsorships for every NCAA championship and event. So if you want to sponsor an NCAA championship, you can't just decide, I'm going to sponsor NCAA soccer championships or field hockey or women's basketball. You have to sponsor, be a corporate partner for all 90 of the NCAA championships. And all of that money gets directed through the CBS Turner contract, and all of it gets credited to the men's basketball tournament for money they bring in. Whereas if you just want to sponsor the women's tournament, none of that shows up on the balance sheet as money that the women have helped to earn.
So what you're saying, Dan, is that on the books, all of this money that gets accrued from that $1 billion deal, which enables the NCAA to sell sponsorships for all the other championship events in every other NCAA sport, besides football, of course, because the NCAA doesn't actually operate that championship, all of that money gets filed under the heading of men's.
Correct.
Wow.
On top of the credit, it also limits the number of sponsors or the type of sponsors who might be interested in this. There is a really high financial hurdle that you have to clear to be one of these big time NCAA sponsors. And if there's a company who has a specific interest in promoting women's sports, or even one that doesn't have the bank account to sponsor all of these, they don't have the option to just sponsor the women's tournament or just sponsor a different sport because of the way that this is structured.
Just to be very clear about this, Dan, you're not allowed to bid on individual sports like women's basketball or any of the other sports because the package that's available for sale is only the all-in package that is obviously headlined by the men's NCAA tournament.
Right. So I think it's pretty fair to say that they're almost certainly leaving money on the table by not allowing other companies to get in with just the women's game if they wanted to do so without sponsoring all 90 other championships. And remember, all of these relationships are dictated by contracts that have a pretty long shelf life. The CBS and Turner deal, for example, extends for a whole another decade. That won't be up until 2032. So unless the NCAA is able to renegotiate the terms of that, if they want to go down that road, it could be a long time before they're able to even consider some of these changes.
All right, Dan. So beyond the timeline question, there is actually the practical matter of how do you change this system? What proposals are on the table? And I want to get to that with you after the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Dan, as we've established, we have now celebrated the one-year anniversary of the TikTok heard around the world, the thing that sparked all of this change. So what has changed as you've seen it tangibly in terms of like what this year's women's tournament looks like versus the embarrassment that was last year?
Well, it is different. We're not talking about an NCAA embarrassment this year, which is a victory for them. They have made some basic changes. I think what we can call sort of they've picked off all the low-hanging fruit at this point. Some of the things they've done, they've increased the number of teams from 64 to 68 so that they have the same number of opportunity for men's and women's teams. They're now using the March Madness brand and logo in the women's tournament, something they've never done before.
Wait a minute. So the March Madness, that whole branding, that had never actually been used for the women's tournament?
No, this is the first year ever that you see a March Madness logo on anything to do with the NCAA women's basketball tournament.
Wow.
And there was some confusion in Indianapolis thinking that maybe they weren't allowed to use the marks for the women's tournament and they just wanted to reserve them for the men's. Turns out there was nothing that was ever actually keeping them from doing both.
Wow. So presumably, yeah, they wanted to keep that for the men specifically for reasons having to do with marketing and such, I can only presume. But then what else have we seen that's changed?
So again, they took care of some of the easy things that were embarrassing to them last year. The swag bags that the players get are now identical. The players' lounges and the family lounges that are available at some of these Final Four sites are now identical. And they're doing a little bit better job of promoting both the men's and women's tournaments on cross-platform promotion and making sure that things are a little bit more equal in that sense.
And so the goal here, Dan, if you were to describe it, would be what, given all of these changes?
Well, I think in the first year, the goal was let's take care of all the easy stuff, and then we'll promise to continue looking at how we can really make structural changes that will allow us to avoid these problems down the road.
And so when you go and actually interview the people around the women's game, the players, the coaches, the administrators, what do they make of this sort of first level of change?
So far, they've been grateful that the NCAA has started to fix the problem, but nobody is happy with how far they've gone to date. It's kind of like turning to the plumber who just cleaned up the big pile of sewage in your front lawn and saying, thanks, but now how about fixing the broken pipe that caused this problem in the first place? So I spoke to a handful of coaches and players that span at least three generations of women's basketball, from Stanford's Tara Vanderveer, who's been coaching there since long before any of her current players were even born, up to Angel Reese, who's a sophomore this year at Maryland. And I think they've all heard these problems before. They've all heard these promises that it's going to get better before. And so they all fall somewhere on the spectrum between cautious optimism and caustic skepticism. And Pablo, it is worth noting that some of the biggest skeptics right now are actually in Congress. Within the last week, we've seen at least a handful of members of Congress who put forth this new bill saying that the federal government may need to step in and try to hold the NCAA accountable because they've been very disappointed with the lackluster performance the NCAA has had so far in their response, and even calling it a caveman mentality that they've taken to trying to fix these problems.
So before we talked about the sponsorship deal structure, that's the thing where the men get the bulk of the credit and a bulk of the money. That's the structure that results in all of these trickle-down inequities. But in terms of the TV deal that the women get, Dan, for the tournament, how does that factor into this whole math?
So about a decade ago, ESPN bought the rights to show not only the women's basketball tournament, but also 28 other sports, things like soccer and baseball and their championship events. They pay right now about $41, $42 million a year, depending on the year on that deal, which runs in through 2024. But in the decades since that deal was made, both media rights and women's basketball have skyrocketed in proportion. Just the women's tournament alone, when it's up for renegotiation in a couple of years, could be worth anywhere from $80 to $110 million, let alone all the other sports tacked on top of that.
And this is where I have to break the fourth wall here, Dan, because we work, obviously, for ESPN. This is ESPN Daily. And so when you go to our corporate bosses requesting comment about, hey, this deal that you paid actually pretty under market right now, what do they tell you in response?
Well, they didn't say much. They didn't exactly want to line up and say, sure, we'd love to pay a whole bunch more money for something we're already paying for. But when I talked to the NCAA folks, they said, we plan to take this to an open market. We plan to take this to whatever is going to be the highest bidder. And, you know, ESPN obviously still wants to bid on these things. It's just fair to say that the price tag for women's basketball is going to be much higher in a few years than it currently is.
So you just said, Dan, that the women's TV deal runs through 2024, and the men's TV deal that includes the sponsorship rights, again, for all sports, runs through 2032, which is a long ways off. So it remains to be seen if the NCAA just waits for that contract to end before they address any of these structural challenges, or if they elect to take like a more forceful approach to revise those deals in the present. But I guess in the meantime, are there other avenues for reform for them to pursue here? What else could be on the table?
Well, we talked about maximizing the value before. The other part of this is using that money and how they distribute it and how they incentivize teams to try to invest more in the women. The NCAA gives out more than half of the money they bring in every year to their schools. So they gave about $613 million last year to Division I schools. And they use a bunch of different criteria to decide who gets what from that pot. But the only piece of criteria that's related to how a school does in its actual athletic performance is based on how you do in the men's basketball tournament. Mm. About a quarter of the money that they give out, $168 million last year, is distributed based on how well your teams did in the basketball tournament. There's no such equivalent on the women's side. So for instance, this year, a team that played in one game that got in from the MAC conference and lost in the opening round of the men's tournament will bring home a bunch of money for their conference based on that. But the team that wins the national championship, South Carolina, UConn, whoever it ends up being this weekend, will bring home $0 for their school based on how well they've done in the women's tournament.
Yeah, I didn't know this, Dan. The idea that it does not actually matter what you do in any of these championship events except for men's basketball, that is jarring.
Yeah, and when I talk to some of these coaches like Adia Barnes at Arizona, they say, well, no kidding. This is a business. If you're not going to pay us money for success, we can't expect our schools to invest in us to succeed.
So the carrot at the end of the stick does not exist for the women. And the question now that I have is there a carrot at the end of the stick for the NCAA in terms of actually changing how this works?
Well, the NCAA is definitely facing more stick than carrot at the moment. We talked about Congress putting pressure on them. There's been a number of think tanks and advocacy groups who have been talking about trying to change this incentive plan. And even coaches we've heard speaking up about it at press conferences in the past couple of weeks. NCAA President Mark Emmert addressed this briefly at his press conference in Minneapolis in the days leading up to the Final Four here.
There have been the beginnings of discussions around whether or not it should look like the same thing on the men's side. There's a group working on it right now. I would hope that those are decisions that could be made within the next, calendar year, for example.
But it's not Emmert who gets to make that decision. It would be the NCAA's Division I board of directors who have to change an incentive like that. And that's made up mostly of university presidents and athletic directors. So it would be the schools themselves that have to all get together and decide they want to make this change.
It is a very challenging debate among the schools. Once you start talking about how you're going to divide resources, then those are difficult.
Because of how slowly the NCAA moves at times, even if they decide this is a good idea, again, it could be a long time before anything gets done.
And the other new thing on the table, Dan, to discuss here is name, image, and likeness, right? Because this is new legislation which now allows college athletes, men and women, to be paid by brands, to be sponsored individually. This used to be like black market stuff that you couldn't do above board. Now they can. And so this conversation around equity, how does all of that social media stuff now figure into this conversation as you understand it?
College players have a bigger voice than they've ever had before, and they have more control over that voice than they've ever had before because they can now make those decisions on their own as marketers of their own and lining up some of these NIL deals. We've seen some of them during this tournament alone with college women's players trying to get involved in talking about the pay gap difference or equity in general. And I think the more that they make noise about this, the more the NCAA has to respond, right? The reason we're here in the first place is because of a TikTok from Sedona Prince. She said she knows we have to keep that noise up. We know we have to keep the pressure on. If the NCAA is going to do more than just take care of the low-hanging fruit that they did in this past year, the players are going to have to keep that pressure on them.
And so beyond even the public pressure, beyond like the force of shame, which has been proven to be quite potent in terms of instigating change here, Dan, how about the financial logic just on the basis of pure selfishness? What do you think the NCAA should be incentivized to do just in terms of the logic of money?
Right. This doesn't have to be a fairness argument or a morality argument anymore. This is makes good business sense. There is plenty of evidence to show that when you invest in women's sports, the returns are usually very good. Just in the past couple of years, right, there were 4.1 million people that watched the 2021 women's title game. That's up nearly 10%. The Big Ten said that their viewership was up over 40% for women's basketball games this year because they're starting to invest in it, because the women have bigger platforms than they had before. And if you continue to invest in the women's game, the theory is that it will grow. And this argument that we started with, right, that the reason the women don't get as much is because they just don't bring in any money and they lose money, that quickly goes away. It's already gone away, but you can continue to build on that and make it stronger. Look, I don't think there's any point in the foreseeable future where the women are bringing in $1 billion a year like the men's contract is because of the way some of it's lined up. But there's no reason to think that the women can't be a great financial earner for the NCAA. And if that money gets reinvested in the women's game, they should be able to continue to grow at the path that they're already growing at, which is astronomical.
Dan Murphy, thank you for reporting and explaining a very complicated scenario.
Thanks, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Bradford Craig, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Andre Soto, Christian Gardner, Abu Kamara, and Jackson Ogilo. And also, as we end this week, I do want to note that tomorrow morning, we're going to be bringing you a special updated encore presentation of an episode we ran a couple weeks back with the very grizzled voice of Wright Thompson, who uncovered and unpacked the entire life story, basically, of Mike Krzyzewski. So I'll talk to you then.